accession number 20364, reel 3.
On reel 3.
Right, now about in and out of the line, and then the Duke of Wellington's were on the hook, which I think most of the people out in Korea over the last couple of years would admit was the spooky position. Saw an awful lot of action. And the Dukes were shelled, and I forget how many thousands of shells were put in on their positions. But their trenches were caving in, and the Chinese did a full frontal assault and overran them. And we at the time were out of the line in reserve. And they took a hell of a battering. And they pulled them off, and then once again the good old Black Watch did a counter attack. And I don't know whether it was the Jocks or the Bagpipes frightened the Chinese away, but they ran anyway. And we again moved in to take over the position. And God, what a mess. Digging up bodies, trying to dig out trenches. And they had taken one hell of a pasting. And God, they had put up a fight. You know, each and every one of them must have been a hero, because the Chinese, in terms of dead and wounded, took a real thrashing. And we went in, and then we had the good news given to us that they were waiting for another Chinese onslaught, which they knew was intended. That was their plan, and they said it might be a few days, it might be a week. But they're going to hit us again. So of course, we got the positions dug out. We got it sorted and sat back waiting. Did our patrols as usual. Again, I took a patrol out, and they were waiting for us. But we got that notice. We beat a hasty retreat, and the wireless operator sent off a code word, beer barrel, and almost immediately 3-inch mortars, and then just a few seconds afterwards, or 25 pounders bombarded the end of the spur. They'd all been fixed in where the chinks were waiting for us. And the King's Liverpool would move to Korea then, and I had a fella with me on attachment for them, doing what I'd done in the early stages of my time out there, learning the positions and the drill, one thing and another. And he suddenly threw his arms up and went down. So I shouted to the other two chaps, keep running, and I got down, managed to get him over my shoulder, go up the hill. And suddenly he started mumbling and moaning, so I stopped and thought I was fairly safe then anyway. I put him down, and I checked him out, and he'd been hit in the small of the back by a huge lump of chalk or something that had left white all over his coat. He wasn't wounded at all. I thought it was shrapnel or something like that, but it was just chalk that had hit him, and he was fine. Oh, that was something else for us to laugh about. And fortunately for us, the Chinese changed their tactics and the attack never did come. And we got away with life on the hook. But all came off it feeling much, much older, I think, and tireder. It was a nasty position. And after that, it was just a general sort of thing. It was routine, really, out there. Drill when you were out of the line, and exercises, and then back in the line, and patrol. Very much routine wherever you were. Sometimes the Chinese would harry you. They loved to get out on your wire and shake it and rattle it and try to put the frighteners on you a bit. We had several experiences of that, but fortunately never came to anything. I think the things that you will always remember, and any fella that served in Korea, was the weather, the extremes. The extreme heat in summer and the terrible, terrible coldness in the winter. I believe we served in temperatures of red down to minus 40 Fahrenheit. But we were more fortunate than the early fellas out there because we had the clothing. The early troops out there just didn't have that clothing and they were no good. The boots with studs, they froze to the ground. And the just general dress and overcoats and that sort of thing was nowhere near sufficient to keep out cold. And we did benefit in that. We had good winter clothing, good boots, beautiful anoraks, waterproof, windproof clothing, snow suits. Matter of fact, when you went on patrol in the winter, you looked like a Michelin man. There were so many clothes on. Would have been quite protective, I would have thought, against a burp gun bullet, trying to get all through that lot. But then again, we were only allowed out for a maximum of 4 hours because of the dangers of frostbite. And when you got back, you had to change your boots, your inner soles, your socks. And you'd sit in pairs with your feet up and rub each other's feet and put the powder on, all that sort of thing. And as far as I know, the battalion had the best record out there of frostbite of all. It was very good. And that basically was my life in Korea.
What did you think of the enemy?
I admired them. Of course, they were fighting on their own terrain, basically. But if you mixed it with them out in the paddy fields, they were likely to run rings around you. When they attacked, they relied on sheer number, force of numbers. Even to the fact that their first lines of troops didn't carry weapons. They were merely there to get on your wire and get the wire down and let their troops following them get through. But we had experiences where they showed themselves to be quite humane, although they had a terrible reputation, especially amongst prisoners of war. But I remember one incident of one of our fellows getting badly wounded, and they couldn't treat him, and they brought him back. They laid him on a stretcher outside our wire. They were doing a job the same as we were. I don't think they were as well fed and clothed as even we were out there. But I only ever came face to face with one. That was on a patrol with Lieutenant Petty and a fellow called Junior Rex. We were going across to hill they called Mark. The object was to try and snatch a prisoner. But whilst going across, I was bringing up the rear, and the lieutenant moved forward, he put his hand up, and Junior Rex moved forward, and he went down and put his hand up, and as I stood up to go, the chink stood up in front of me. And, well, I can see it as if it was yesterday. He raised his hand like a Red Indian. And I couldn't fire on him, even if I'd wanted to, because Ginger Rex was behind him, and Ginger couldn't fire on him because I was behind him. He was right in our line of fire. And he just sort of laid his hand on his heart, and waved and walked off. And we let him go. I think we were amazed. Anyway, we got together again, the three of us in the huddle, and it was an old Chinese trick to send one or two out alone, and if you tackled them, the cavalry arrived over the hill, and so we hung around for a little while and nothing happened, so decided that he was just a single bloke, because they operated single blokes with little mortars and that sort of thing. Anyway, Lieutenant Petty decided we'd go on, and we went on. We got up under the Chinese positions, and we could hear them whistling, singing, one playing a mouth organ. They were building, they were great builders in their trenches, they dug deep systems and built. We could hear them hanging away and banging away, and we sat there and sat there. Nobody come up the hill, up the path, so we never got the chance to snatch anybody. But whilst we were sitting there, I wasn't bothered at all. I had this, a feeling again that everything was okay, and I even remember writing my name, rank and number in the sand on the hill there with a stick while we were sitting there. And then we called it a day and left to get back across before dawn. Got almost back and bumped into one of our own patrols, which put us in more danger than we'd been all night. But fortunately, a few shouts and one thing and another, and we got back in. But yeah, I respected the Chinese, and I think most of our fellows respected them.
What was your interpretation of that encounter with the Chinese face to face?
Well, the only thing I can think is that he didn't spot me, And he stood up to move on, came face to face with me. Obviously, didn't want hassle. Probably just an ordinary soldier, and was quite happy to get out of it. And it wasn't till afterwards that, discussing it, we said we were going across there onto their positions, which placed you in a good deal of danger, to try and get a prisoner. And within about 10 minutes, a quarter of an hour setting out, we'd had one virtually in our pocket. But that never dawned on us. The whole situation was so unreal. And, well, of course, nobody ever knew from that day to this whether he was just an ordinary soldier, what he was doing, or nothing else. It was just another of those crazy situations. These things are always it.
What did you think of the Korean civilians?
Well, we didn't see a lot of them because we were always in the military zone, and when we pulled out, there were very few civilians about, and mainly the ones where we were just peasants. I had great respect for our Korean porters that used to lug all the stuff up to the line for us and everything else. And they were terrific. But we never got to the towns or anything. Had very little to do with them, really. But they were nice enough, what we did encounter.
You said you came from a long line of poachers. Is that true, or was that just a joke?
Oh, no, that's true. That is very true.
Had you done poaching yourself?
Oh, yeah, with my uncles. Yeah, my father. But more with my uncles. It was a way of life around this area then, you know. If you went out poaching late in the evening or something like that, you were most likely to bump into more poachers, and that was all. It was it was quite a business, yeah.
And that helped you as a soldier?
I think it did. Yeah, I think it did.
How do you feel now about having served in Korea with the RAF?
Proud. Great memories. A great regiment. Taught me a lot. Taught me a lot of independence. How to rough it a bit. And even to this day, the comradeship. It was terrific.
Did you ever serve in any other wars?
No. No, I just did Korea, and I came home, had a job to settle, and I received notification that I'd been given a mention in dispatches, and received an offer from the battalion to go back. They had then moved to Egypt. I'd have gone back and gone straight into training for sergeant. But I turned it down. One of those crossroads in life. But, then, as I say, I was in the TA, the local battalion, the 5th Battalion, who's headquarters then were at Guildford, and I rose to warrant officer 2, did a fair amount of service in the TA, belonged to the Royal Fusiliers Association at the Tower of London, and the Korean Vets, West Surrey branch. Virginia Water. Still meet every 4 weeks and go out on the range dues and that sort of thing. Still get a bit of military stuff into us. But yeah, I've never regretted my national service.
What did you get the mention in dispatches for?
Well, there's one little story I omitted, actually. Again, I was going out with three fellas to a listening post, and we received information from C Company along the line. Their observation post had picked up movement in the area that I was going to. So our officers conceived a plan that I went out as normal with the three fellas, and if there was any enemy out there, try to make contact, and then Lieutenant Petty would be coming out with a 15-man fighting patrol straight away. Well, we went out and we were 3/4 of the way there, I suppose, and we detected movement on our right in a minefield, which was nothing rare. The Chinese had a wonderful way of moving about in minefields. They hit a lot of our people from minefields. And I decided to lay down fire straight away. And we just went down and we opened up and threw grenades. And Lieutenant Petty and his gallant men appeared and opened fire. We gave the area a good shellacking. And that was that. But as soon as it got light, we weren't as daring as they were to move into a minefield, but we could see most of it. We couldn't detect any bodies, which again wasn't unusual, because the Chinese had a great way of always cutting off their dead if they could, and that sort of thing. So that was that. But for that, I received a mention in dispatches, which I'm not completely in agreement. I'm not in agreement with the system, actually, where the fellow in charge gets the glory, because the three blokes that were with me were just as good as me.
What platoon were you in?
I was in 4 platoon, Baker Company.
And which section?
I was corporal of 3 section. Our other claim to glory, you know, things keep coming to mind, this Christmas 52, the Lord Mayor of London sent a huge parcel out of gifts and things that had been donated. Well, of course, shared amongst many, it wouldn't have been a great deal. So they decided that they would give it to the section that was the furthest north, which happened to be my section. We were nearly always point section. And we got the parcel that lots of things in it that weren't of use to us, such as scarves, socks, because we had special socks, you know, and everything out there. All well intentioned, you know, no denying that. Some stuff, of course, there was chocolate in there and biscuits, cake, some of that stuff. But we shared it round anyway, as far as it would go. That's the way it was out there. You know, if a bar of chocolate with 8 squares, 8 fellas had one. And, yes. I'm glad it happened to me.